We're not told anything that is special about this audience, just that it is an audience. It is a large gathering of people, and Jesus preaches what we have is the longest sermon of any of the sermons saved. It's not saying that he didn't preach longer ones, it's just out of all the texts, this is the longest one. And there have been many books written on the Sermon on the Mount. I've got a few commentaries. That's all they're dedicated to is the Sermon on the Mount. And here in the middle of it, toward the beginning, the most famous probably is the Beatitudes, as we call them there, verses 2 through about verse 11, 12. In verse 13, you are the salt of the earth. Now, I want to stop for a moment. We're not going to do this for every single phrase, but who is he talking to? You are the salt of the earth. Well, you go back to verse 1, we're told, seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. And so some have focused and said, well, the Beatitudes weren't spoken to the entire crowd or crowds, but this was probably something said to the apostles and then maybe expanded out. I don't know how I read this. I could see it being, that is, verse 2 through about verse 12, maybe being specifically to the disciples themselves. But in verse 13, it is a plural word, which I don't think he's just limiting it to the disciples, but these people who may, well, think of themselves as nothing. You know, they don't have any political power. Paul will say this. Look over, leave your hand here or your finger here in Matthew 5. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, because Paul makes the point in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 that as you look around, there aren't very many noble, not very many smart, you know, it's not like Christians were known as these people that were above all other people, the holiest of people in that sense. It's not that you became holy and therefore you became a Christian. You were broken and needed fixing. That's what Christianity is. And so as he says in chapter 1, verse 26, 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26, consider your calling. Think about your calling. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many powerful. Not many noble birth, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. Some of the best lessons you're ever going to learn, even today, is from a child, you know. on social media account like Twitter or Facebook, I follow a couple of these accounts where it's animals, you know. Either there's a personification of animals treating each other really nicely. There's this one that's really cute, of a monkey that looks very young. So maybe a baby monkey that has this kitten and is just petting the kitten so, so gently and so nicely. And I like things like that. It's like, that's good, you know? So these are the things that the world may not be impressed by. We're impressed by a man who has a lot of money and drives really nice cars, lives in big houses. He owns things, you know? That's kind of what we're thinking. But Jesus and Paul would agree that God chooses the humble. You are the salt of the earth, he says, going back to Matthew 5. But if salt loses its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? How do you fix salt? You know, it's one of these things we don't really think about. We live in a time where we have access to pepper that's freshly ground, you know, peppercorns and salt that is large enough. We may even have, you know, the salt things that do the dispensing not just of salt, but you can break the salt crystals down into salt you use. I'm not supposed to be near salt, so I'm not really big into that. But bottom line, salt, when it loses what it is, its essence, how do you give it its essence? How do you restore saltiness to salt? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. This is what they did in the Roman time. They literally would take a pillar of salt that was useless. It didn't have any worthiness to it. It had no preserving power. And they would put it out in the street. And they would have it as it would be broken down by the rain or people just walking through. And that's exactly how they salted their roads. They would just do that. And that's what he's saying. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how do you restore its saltiness? How do you make it salt again? Except it's good for nothing. You just throw it out. And in the same context, he says, you, the same group, you're the light of the world. You crowds of people, you maybe somewhat the offscouring, the people that the rest of the world doesn't really esteem. And I think that's another thing. Look over in Hebrews 11, thinking about the theme of the unwanted, the people who are truly on the outskirts. I know today we kind of think of the people who have been disenfranchised. As you turn to Hebrews chapter 11, I know it's hard enough for me to remember where we're going as I keep talking, but Hebrews chapter 11, toward the end of this great chapter where he talks about all these men and women who live their lives according to God's faith and faith in God, he mentions in verse 36 that there were others who suffered mocking and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, sawn in two, which is a reference maybe to Isaiah. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. And then verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy. The world looked at them and said, man, these are destitute. These are the afflicted. They're mistreated. God doesn't love these people. And actually, God says the world wasn't worthy of them as they wandered about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. These are the people that I think Jesus is referencing, the people that aren't the powerful ones. You know, when Jesus was on the earth, and we read in the gospel accounts, a lot of the time that he spent with scribes and Pharisees and Sadducees was arguing with them about things that they needed to learn. They needed to learn about mercy. They had no clue when it came to mercy or compassion. You can read in Mark 3 of a man who has a withered hand. You and I may not really dwell on the idea of what it is to have a withered hand. But you can imagine in an agrarian society where they work the field, how does a man who has a hand that's practically useless go out and work in the field? He really couldn't work that well. Most of the work they would do is agrarian, you know, whether it's harvesting or planting, you need two hands, two healthy hands. He has one that's withered. And on the Sabbath day, in front of all the scribes and Pharisees, he says to the man, come here, and he does, and he says, your hand is healed. But the question he asked the rest of them before is it right to heal on the Sabbath? Is it right to do the good thing or the bad thing? You know, in other contexts, he talks about them having oxes that are out in the ditch, and you're going to go do everything you can to save your ox. But a man, of course, is greater than an ox. They had no compassion. Mark 3 actually tells us that Jesus looked around at them and was grieved at them. He was angry with them. Why? Because they had no compassion. These are the people who lost compassion in Matthew 5, and he says, you're the salt, you're the light. The city that is set on the hill can't be hidden. If it's got light, you can't hide that. A city set on a hill, people don't light a lamp, in verse 15, and put it under a basket. You don't do that. I mean, it would be like being in your own house and turning your light on and immediately doing everything you can to hide that light. Jesus says you don't do that. It gives light to everyone in the house. So in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven. I think sometimes as Christians, we're afraid of the society we live in because if we live out loud, we live in such a way that other people are going to feel bad about what they're doing, it's going to come down on us, right? We'd rather just hide that light. I know the little children's song is one of my favorites. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Well, we learn as adults that there's a time not to let it shine. That's not what Jesus says. Jesus doesn't say, look, you need to be discerning and let it shine only at certain times. He says, if you turn a light on, or if you light a lamp, you don't put it under a basket. And I don't know that he's implying ever, but when would you ever do that for real? When would you do that? Well, maybe when the enemy's outside, you want to make sure that you have something to see by and you don't want them to see that you're seeing. Otherwise, when would you ever do something like this? And I think as Christians, we're maybe more influenced by the world than we really want to admit. It's not just liking what the world likes. It's getting to the point where we're scared to identify the wrong things. And I know we're at that point. We live in a society that says that what is good is really bad. And that what's really bad from what God says, that's actually really, really good. That's to be honored. It's to be held up in high esteem. What? And it's not just that now it's happened, and I don't want you to misunderstand me. I don't think now is the worst mankind's ever been. I don't believe that. I really don't. I think there's some bad things going on. But we're not Romans 1 yet. We're not Noah's day. You go back to the time of Noah, God said it grieved him that he had made man. He hasn't gotten to that point yet. Now, I'm not saying that it might be that 2 Peter 3 comes to pass, that God says, I'm destroying the earth today. Oh, no. It doesn't seem so in my own mind, in my own thinking. There is still good in this world. It is overcast by the dark shadows of the earth and sinful people who love the darkness, you know. In John 3, that's exactly what he says. The light has come into the world and men loved darkness rather than the light, because they're afraid their deeds would be exposed. Who wants that, right? As Christians, we are people who expose. Look over with me in Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5. And maybe this is part of the thing. We need to have the fire lit again. You know, when you have a lamp, this is what they would do. They have a little bit of oil in a lamp, and they would have a wick that comes out of it, and you would light that, of course. But the oil fed the wick. And sometimes you had to trim the lamp. And what's involved in trimming was to cut off the wick part that had been burnt. We do this with our candles. I don't think about this. I've got a few candles back in my office. And there are times that the wick, as you burn it, it's just, you know, it gets bigger and bigger, but it's useless. That part doesn't even burn anymore. So you trim it. You take something that cuts it. They have specialized tools. You cut it and you trim your lamp. Sometimes that's exactly what we need as we come together to worship and study, is to trim the lamp so that we burn brighter and more effectively. As you look here in Ephesians chapter 5, he says in verse 7, don't become partners with them. Don't. For at one time you were darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. The fruit of light is found in everything that is good, right, and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord, not to the society at large or anything like that. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. Instead, expose them. It is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. We're Christians. We are to be reflections of the Son of God. You know, we're like a moon. We're not the sun that shines and warms our galaxy. We're the moon next to the earth, and we reflect the glory of the sun. And when we talk about salt, I know this is one of those lessons I could divide easily into two, but as Jesus puts salt and light together, we see that salt had a really big and important significance in the Roman time of the first century here. Salt was actually traded, and when I was looking it up, I Googled, this is where I got my source material, basically, as far as salt and all, that in the first century, it's not just I asked Google how important is salt, I said, look, in the first century, how important was salt? Salt was traded ounce for ounce as you would gold. Now, I know we all know the importance of gold. Gold's important. And in times of high inflation and all, people buy gold, so they have that. They have a steady income. You know, if everything else falls apart, banks fall apart, they have gold. Back in that day, ounce for ounce, gold and salt were of equal value. That doesn't mean gold was of less value. That means salt was that worthy. Salt was so important that it was worth that much. Rome's major highway through their entire Italy was called the Via Salaria, which is Salt Road. Why? Not because the road was made out of salt, but because that's how salt was traded from one end of the empire to another. It went by the Salt Road. Someone who was worth their salt in the first century was someone that was worthy to be paid. Salt smugglers. Sorry, I got smalt smugglers. That's exactly what was going on in my mind. Salt smugglers, they got the death penalty. I mean, in our time, salt, you're like, okay, if I can't have salt, I'll go to another store and get salt, you know? Salt is, from our view, very plentiful. People who smuggled salt and got caught got killed. Jews sealed their covenants by exchanging salt, because it was like exchanging gold. except it was useful for something more than just having money. Salt is used as a preservative, of course. It is protective. It has certain properties in it that sanitize. It is used even today in some parts of the world as antiseptic. You know, we talk about an antiseptic we buy in a bottle, but, you know, some places they just use salt. So the question is our area of influence better because we're there? Or are we improving things? Or is our saltiness so bad that we need something to make us salty? Now, I know usually when we say somebody is salty, we don't mean a good thing. But think of it in the most positive way. Christians need to be salty. That doesn't mean we're rude and mean. It means we're actually making things better where we are as best we can. Not because we're so great, but because we know we serve Christ. Look over with me in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. And we'll look at verse 17 and then verses 23-24. Verse 17, Colossians 3, Paul writes that whatever you do, which covers everything, whatever you do, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And then verse 23-24, he says, whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you'll receive the reward or the inheritance as your reward. You're serving the Lord Christ. And then he gives the warning, and the wrongdoer is going to be paid back for the wrong he's done, and there's no partiality. You know, we go to work. Is work a better place because we're there? Maybe we don't like the workplace. You know, we have people there who are rude to us and just, you know, we know they're not really working well. They're working for the paycheck. They're not working to improve anything about anything. Do we make anything better? You know? Whether it's school or in traffic or wherever we are we making anything better? That's kind of the point. As Christians, we're to be true reflections, good reflections, accurate reflections of Jesus. And I know I've said this before, that sometimes as you talk to people who don't know much about Christianity, what they do know about Christians is we're judgmental. We're condescending. We look down on people. And I'm not saying that at no point, I mean, Jesus, I think, interacted with the Jews enough, as you see it in John 8, 9, and 10. They didn't like Jesus. It's not that Jesus was a bad guy. It's just he brought to light things they didn't want to have brought to light. You know? There were ways that they thought. Jesus exposed their thinking. Jesus exposed how they felt about things. A man with a withered hand, they have a hard heart against him, and Jesus exposed their lack of compassion. Who wants that? You know? Remember when Jesus overturned the tables? You know, we read, it happened twice that he does this. And the second time, they confront Jesus. Why are you doing this? By what authority? That was really the question. By what authority are you doing this? And he says, I got a question for you, John. His baptism, from men or from God? And they huddle. It doesn't say, the scripture doesn't say they huddled. It basically says they talked amongst themselves. And they figured if they said it was from men, everybody thought John was a cool dude. And was an important dude, so they couldn't say anything against him. So they say, we can't say that. And if we say from God, he's going to wonder why we didn't do it ourselves. And so their answer to get him out of the trouble that they knew they were in was, we don't know. In other words, they copped out, right? And they just copped out. And so Jesus says, I'm not going to tell you by what authority I'm doing this. He had authority to do it as the Son of God. But what was the problem? The problem was they made money. Their whole idea of the temple was an opportunity to make money. They were greedy. God exposed that. Do we expose? Do we live a certain kind of life that people are like, we should do better? There's a couple more statements here on the salt slide, and then we'll move to another quote that I have here. Consider, as I've already mentioned, the compassion of Jesus in Mark 6:34, which is a little further down from Mark 3, of course. When he went ashore, that is Jesus, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. They didn't have leadership or help. And he began to teach them many things. And of course, salt is used to make things taste better. Now, I know there's some of us who say, well, I don't really like salt. Well, maybe you don't, but I will say, and I learned this the hard way, that salt in everything. I mean, it's really funny when you start being told, I have a dietary restriction, not of food, but salt. I can only have 2 grams of salt, which I had to sit there and translate into what does that mean? Which it's 2,000 milligrams. That sounds better, doesn't it? 2,000 of whatever. It's the same thing, 2 grams of salt. So I start reading labels. And there's some things that you're like, man, that sounds really good. And you turn the label over and it's got 1,000 milligrams of salt in a serving. And if you eat the box, that's 7 servings. And I'm not kidding. I'm like, I could eat the box. That's 7,000 milligrams. That's 7 grams. That's, I can't have it. You know, it just makes your blood pressure increase. Just let you know, there are certain things that's, if you're having blood pressure problems, sometimes that's kind of what you need to do. You don't know until you know. There's a gentleman by the name of Havner. I don't know who he is. He just had a good quote. I'd like to share it with you. I have heard and read many developments of the salt theme. The outline usually runs the same course. It seasons, purifies, preserves. But somebody ought to remind us that salt also irritates. Real living Christianity. And maybe the way we read that is real living Christianity rubs this world the wrong way. And I think he makes a really good point, because I think as Christians for decades, we've been trained to think we got to be nice. And I'm not saying, and I don't want you to think, well, preacher says we don't need to be nice. We need to be rude. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a time, like we read in our Bible study, Wednesday night. Turn over to John chapter 9. If somebody asks you a question, don't beat around the bush. I know this is easy to do because we don't want to offend people, we say. We don't want them thinking something that we really didn't intend. And I get that. I'm not saying that we should not season our speech, as Paul says in Colossians 4. Season our speech. Salt seasons. So yes, in that way, we need to say good things in good ways. But notice in John 9, this whole thing where Jesus has healed a man who was born blind. And the big question the disciples ask is it his parents that sinned, or is it he who sinned that he suffers this fate? And Jesus says, neither. It's not his parents, it's not him, this is to glorify God. That's why it happened. And the people are arguing with the blind man who can see now that this was all faked, that this was something that just, it shouldn't happen. It's like he did something wrong, but now he can see. And then they want to find out who Jesus is. And Jesus basically confesses to the man, I'm the one you're looking for. In verse 35, Jesus heard that he had cast him out, or they had cast him out. They kicked him out of the synagogue, kicked him out of church, and they have found him. Jesus said, do you believe in the Son of Man? He said, who is he that I can believe him, or believe in him? And Jesus said, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking with you right now. And he said, Lord, I believe. It's like he's just, wah, you know. That's really, the word said doesn't mean he said, Lord, I believe. It's kind of a, wah. That's really, which how do you translate that, right? He worshipped him. And Jesus said, judgment is why I came into the world, that those who don't see may see, and those who say they see can become blind. And some of the Pharisees, notice this. This is where salt rubs the wrong way sometimes. It irritates. Some of the Pharisees near him heard this. They heard this. And they said, are we blind? Now you know what 21st century Christians do. Somebody goes, well, you think I'm blind? Well, I didn't mean that. I don't want you to think that I think you're blind. You know, we beat around the bush so much that what? We become ineffective. We're not an irritant. We're good for nothing other than being thrown out into the street, because that's it. We've lost our saltiness. Jesus replies, if you were blind, you'd see. You'd have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains. In Matthew 15, one of my favorite passages where Jesus is teaching against their hypocrisy. Well did Isaiah say that you adore the Lord with your mouth, but your heart is far from him. That's in Matthew 15 or Mark 7. It's the same basic story there. But in Matthew 15, there's a little difference where the disciples, come to Jesus and say, do you know what you said offended them? In our day and time, if someone came to me, because it's happened, someone says, you said this and it offended them. Well, it depends, I guess, whether or not I'll go fix it or just say, I don't care. Jesus doesn't say, I don't care, but what he does say is, every plant that my Father has not planted is going to be uprooted. I don't know anything about gardening, but if I went out and made a garden full of peppers, I love hot peppers, and I went out there and did that, and I come back out, you know, harvest time,
I do that and I see my peppers and I see cucumbers. I don't like cucumbers. Asparagus? Ooh, no. I don't sit there and go, well, I know I planted a whole bunch of peppers and I'll just get the peppers and leave everything else. I want to know who destroyed my garden because it's my garden. And what am I going to do? Take out all the cucumbers and asparagus and all the other whatever you want to have in there other than my peppers. Jesus doesn't speak in that way, but he says, every plant that my Father has not planted is going to be uprooted. Let them be offended, he says. And I have done that at times where I say to people, just let them be offended. The blind leading the blind, they're both going to fall into the ditch. That's what Jesus said. Now, it's not I wake up every day thinking I'm going to go off. I need to offend somebody today. Go to my neighbor. You're going to hell. Just thought you know. Need to know. How effective is that? That's useless right there, right? I mean, it is. It doesn't help anybody. That's not what we're talking about. But there is a time when maybe at work, everybody at work is applauding the homosexual, right? Oh, he's done a great thing. Why? Because he's married his... whatever, I can't even say the word. Okay, what do we do? What do we do? Now, I'm not saying there is where you pick up a stone and start throwing it, because we have no command to do that. But we can't applaud sin in that way. We can't. And not belong to God. If Jesus were standing right there, what do you think the Lord would do? Would he applaud the sin? I know we say things like, well, we hate the sin, but we love the sinner. There are a lot of passages that say God hates the sinner. It's not just one or two. There are a few where in context, like in the Psalms and the Proverbs, God hates the sin and he hates the one who does the sin, which is the sinner. I know with saying it this way, we kind of want to go, well, what do? We need to stand when we need to stand, right? Look over in Ephesians 6 with me. Because we have a war that we're fighting. If we had an actual war where we're going out, and right when the fight comes to us, we just put our guns down, we not only lose, but everybody that we're trying to help out loses. Can you imagine? You got your gun to protect, and the enemy comes and you put your gun down. You're not effective anymore because you might hurt somebody. Well, that's the point. In Ephesians 6:10, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against rulers and against the authorities and against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. So take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. To do what? To withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand therefore having fastened, notice, having fastened on the belt of truth. When Jesus was asked questions, he answered truthfully. Did it offend people? Sometimes it did. Sometimes it did. And I think we need to understand that when we tell the truth, we don't want to be rude. We want to season. That's Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6. Season our speech with salt. Sometimes what people want, and I think what they need directness, right? It doesn't happen often. It's not like I get phone calls. People say, look, I got a question. Do you think I'm going to hell? I don't get that. But I have had studies with people, whether on Zoom or something, and there's maybe a little bit of the feeling of anonymity because we see each other on a Zoom call when we're studying the Bible together, but we're not really sitting right next to each other. But I've had it that way too. I told y'all months ago I got kicked out of Starbucks because I was reading the Bible and a person did not like that I was reading the Bible and said, well, you know, you have people like you. You're the problem with society. And I'm like, I'm just sitting here. I'm the sort of person when I'm reading, I don't know what's going on. Bombs could be going off, and I'm not kidding. It's like I'm focused. So when she started in on me, I had literally no idea what she was talking about. And I'm just sitting there looking. She was mad I was reading the Bible because the Bible doesn't endorse the lifestyle, apparently, that she was living. And I didn't know what to say. I mean, I wasn't Captain Man out there on her. Yeah, I wasn't. I just, ma'am, I'm sorry, but was I reading this to you? And the passage of reading had nothing to do with anything that I think I thought applied to her. You know, what? I was blown away. And I was asked by the Starbucks management people. They were standing there going, sir, do you mind just leaving? No, I'll leave. I mean, what good was I going to do there? But just having the Bible, I didn't even have my big Bible with me. I had one of my smaller ones, you know. It offends people. But if someone asks you, you're having a discussion with them, and they do finally ask, do you think if I'm doing this, I'm going to go to hell? What are they looking for? They're looking for the truth. And we're not going to beat them up with it. We're just going to say, yes, you know, if it's true. I mean, I don't know the question. I'm leaving this wide open general, but it may be something that they're doing. You're like, no, I don't believe the Bible addresses that. No, that's not an issue. But yes, maybe this is. Jesus told the truth. Do you think we're blind too? He didn't go, well, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but he just said yes. If you say we see, then you don't. I mean, Ephesians chapter 6 says we're fighting a war, and the first part of our armor is the belt of truth, the breastplate of righteousness, which is living right. Shoes, our feet, is the readiness that is given by the gospel of peace. In all circumstances, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. Does that mean we're going to win every argument? Nope. There are a lot of arguments I have to leave because it's just a lot of yelling. You know, sometimes when you win an argument, it's not because you've won and everybody applauds and gives you a trophy. It's because they start calling you names. When it gets personal, sometimes you know you've won. And you just move on. But yeah, salt, sometimes it irritates. I mean, I know if salt gets in your eye, definitely, it irritates. In Luke 15, 11 and 12... Let me get this, and I know we don't have but just a few minutes, and we may be past now. We've got just a couple minutes. Luke verse 15, 11 through 32 is the parable of the prodigal son. And in verse 20, we read that he arose, came to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. Sometimes that's what we need to do. I'm going to say this. This is hard sometimes, though. Salt, and I know I've spent more time on salt than light. Like I said, this could be easily two different sermons, unless you want me to continue on with light. Kind of kidding. But with salt, yes, it does irritate, it preserves, it makes things taste better. But in the regard of what we're talking about here, salt forgives. It can be forgiving. You can add a little salt to something, and it's forgiving. I learned this somewhat recently. I like drinking coffee, and I don't drink it all day. I drink it mostly in the morning, and sometimes there are some sorts of coffee that are just bitter. You know, you brew them up nice and they're just bitter. You add a little bit of salt to your coffee, which sounds weird, takes out the bitterness. I'm not going to tell you about adding pepper. You can add pepper to your coffee too and it takes out the bitterness. That's what I do because I'm really not supposed to have the salt. But salt even does that. And that's kind of the point. Salt makes things in a forgiving way. In John 8:12, again, Jesus spoke saying, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Shifting to the idea of light. How important is light? We know how extremely important it is. Nobody likes walking around in the dark. We really just don't. So what we want to do is be a blessing. We want to be a blessing. Paul puts it this way in 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 and 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. We get comfort, we give comfort. And when we talk about light, and this is the only slide I have on it, why would anyone choose to become a follower of Jesus and then hide? That's what Jesus says. Nobody lights a lamp and then hides it under some basket. And that's kind of what we need. Why become a Christian and then go hide? And it's easy to hide. I know it is. I mean, you could hide in plain sight. You can not say things anytime. Never intervene on anything to help people understand things. Have you ever been in a grocery store line and people in front of you are talking about something that you know is not in the Bible at all? The concept of the rapture, not in the Bible. They've taken the idea from people and crammed it into two or three passages, but it's not there. And I've been in the line where people are talking and in my brain I debate, do I say anything? Because I just want to get out, you know? I want to pay for my stuff and go. And who knows what this will become. And almost always, I can't say that I've always, because that's not true. But almost always I'll say, excuse me. I know I'm in your conversation, but can't help it. Standing right here, I'm a preacher, and I know for a fact that what you're talking about is not in the Bible at all. I mean, it's just not there. Really? I've had that. I've had good, most of the time, if I just kind of gently do this, they're really good about, really? But it says this. No, that's not actually what it says. If you go to 1 Thessalonians 4, they're like, oh, he knows the Bible because he knows Thessalonians, you know? It's kind of a joke because it's not a normal sounding word. But you can do that way. It may be, because it's happened to me before, mind your own business. Okay, I'm just telling you, what you're talking about is not biblical. Just letting you know. And I know why they want me to mind my own business. Because they don't really care what I think, and that's fine. Salt irritates sometimes. Salt makes it better. Light shines. I mean, when you're doing something and you can't see really well, sometimes you say, hey, does anybody have a light? You know, help out and see. Yes, I do, but I'm not sharing it with you. What? Why would anybody choose to become and then hide? As Paul says in Philippians 2, 12, 13, therefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. It is God who works in you, both to will and to do for his good pleasure. As I close, this is our last slide. Shining means that we're reflecting. That's really what it means. We're like the moon rather than the sun. The moon reflects the glory of the sun, and Christians really are to reflect the sun's glory. It may be we're Christians. We've been baptized. We're living right, we think. It may be that our neighbors don't know a thing about it. I'm not saying that we have to put it in their face, but there may be some things, discussions. I know as somebody who preaches, I close doors faster than most anybody. When we're all standing there talking and somebody says, hey, what do you do? I'm a plumber. What do you do? I'm this. I'm that. I'm a preacher. Okay. He's no fun. He's nobody we want around. I just said what I do. I'm just some guy. It's frustrating on my part because it's like, what do you say? I have used the line where years ago I heard somebody else say, what you tell them is not that I'm a preacher, but I work for a carpenter. I don't like that. I mean, I do and I don't. I like it because you're like, we all know what he said, carpenter, Jesus. But we know it kind of gets you out of being in somebody's face about being a preacher or something. And I've had to do it where I'm a preacher, but I don't bite. I don't. I might growl a little, but I don't bite. And they laugh and we move on. And it's like, oh my word. We've got, as a responsibility, as Christians, we've got to be salt. And we've got to be light. Doesn't mean every situation is going to be easy. Doesn't mean we're always going to be the people want in our parties, But at the same time, if we want to go to heaven, at some point we've got to bear fruit in that way. And that's kind of what the admonition for this morning is. So wherever you find yourself, whether at home, work, out in traffic, traffic's probably my albatross, You got to be good. You got to shine. Why? Because we reflect the glory of God. It's not ours. It's not because people are supposed to be looking at us. That's what Jesus said in Matthew 5:16, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father. Not glorify you, but glorify your Father. If you need to be baptized, now's the opportunity for that, and we'd urge you to do that. Right now, come forward, please, as we stand together and sing.